recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line. With a death wish, be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on.
So, like always, we ended the morning show with News of the Weird. And unlike always, I did call those two frauds. I do it quite a bit, but I don't do it all the time. And nothing illustrates how fraudulent one John Granato is his backing of Mike Burrows. Some people are baseball people, some people aren't. I, clearly a baseball person, back Jason Alexander. What did he do when he was put in the proper role? Went out there and dealt. Threw a gem in an emergency start to get the Astros a win a couple days ago. What did Mike Burrows do, knowing he was going to start? What did he do? Gave up four runs, and the Astros lose 4-1 to a bad Minnesota team to lose the series. So we go from our hero and the guy I back to Mike Burrows, the guy John backs, and he goes out there and puts up, well, I would call it a stinker, but it's just another Burrows performance. In fact, right in line with what Burrows does. Now, the bats were silent once again. That didn't help when they only scored the one run. But another outing for Burrows. Unfortunately, another loss for the Astros. But also confirmation that I'm a baseball guy, and John definitely isn't. Fraud, I would say. Don't listen to him anymore about the guys he likes. He was, I can't use the words I like to use. Let's just say he was gratifying Burrows for his performances before they even began. And then we get what we got over the course of the first couple months of the season.
Gratifying.
It's the only way I can get there without, it's the only way I can express to people what I mean without saying what I actually mean. He was really in on Mike Burrows, I say. And then we got what we got. Hey, when you're looking for baseball stuff, come to me. Who got to interview Jeff Blum because of his baseball acumen?
True.
That was me.
True.
That was me before the year. All I'm saying. So the Astros lose. Mike Burrows has been so disappointing. It got me, your baseball guy, to look up who the Astros gave up in that trade. That's how bothered I am. Like Jacob Melton, whatever. He's not doing much for the Rays in that three. It was a three-teamer. The Pirates, the Rays, and the Astros were involved. I just want everyone to remember the name Anderson Brito. He is the prospect the Astros gave up. I don't know how baseball minor league rankings work, farm system rankings work from publication to publication, but from what I can tell, he is currently a top 10 prospect in the Rays organization. He's in single A, strikes out a lot of guys, and that's his claim to fame right now as far as what you can look to and say, hey, maybe that translates. He's a long way away. But if Anderson Brito ever becomes anything, it is the black mark on Dana Brown's tenure here. Because Burrows has been, the best thing you can say is at least he's out there.
He's out there,
at least,
man.
Every time his turn in the rotation comes up, he's out there ready to go.
Takes the ball every fifth day.
But other than that, there's not a lot there. Not a lot there. So remember the name Anderson Brito. If he becomes anything, like, I don't care what he does on the major league level. There's the way Burrows is pitching. If he gets a couple outs, that means that's a loss for the Astros.
I do like that would be the black mark on Dana Brown's resume, not the, what, zero playoff wins the last 3 years?
Is some of my opinion based off the fact that John is a big fan of Burroughs? Yeah. Yeah. That's not Dana Brown's fault. It just so happens to be my reality. So John backing Burroughs the way he has and him pitching the way he has leads me to believe if Brito becomes anything, Dana Brown, fireable offense. That's all. Right now, we're along. Dana Brown will likely be on another team's payroll by the time Brito becomes anything on the major league level. Yeah. Just be aware of it. That's all.
That's the you're doing the equivalent of, like, if in 2016 or whatever, someone in Los Angeles was like, this Josh Fields guy sucks. Who'd they trade? Yordan Alvarez? Just keep an eye on that Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, this is what I'm doing.
Calling your shot.
I really hope it doesn't play out that way. Like, hopefully the Astros didn't trade the wrong Anderson Brito to the Rays. I don't know. I imagine they didn't. But let's just hope. We don't have the inverse of what happened with Yordan when the Dodgers made a giant mistake, and we have Yordan. But there it is. The Astros go down. Hey, this is the way you got to talk about them. Because yeah, I really want to get deep into a 4-1 loss to Minnesota on a getaway day? No, I don't. It is the reality that they're, after another series loss, they're back to being 11 games under 500 and not a very good baseball team, not a very entertaining one. So we find ways. That's my way of talking about them in a way that has some reference to what actually happened, but not really, because it's whatever. It's the Twins and the Astros.
And there is something with the afternoon games where it just feels like it happened so long ago that, like, even longer than the, whatever, 4 hours difference between when a normal game starts, that you're like, that I'm already past this game. I'm looking ahead.
I've talked about it, that these games are great for you when you have a bad baseball team. Even if you're locked in, you can be over the defeat by 3:15.
Yep.
And go on.
Don't have to two-screen it with the Western Conference Finals.
No, I don't know if anything unethical happened in the Astros-Minnesota game. Certainly nothing in comparison to what is going on in the Western Conference Finals. We will talk about that. Because we're at our level right now where I don't know what it says about the Thunder that the defending champions seem to resort to some of the most unethical things you can think of. I'm not even talking about the super cut of Shea falling down every time he attempts a jumper, which someone put together.
Just a wild super cut.
To do that to an MVP and it to actually be legitimate.
Yeah, like every one of them, you're like, that's pretty bad.
I mean, it's pretty bad, him falling down for no reason. It extends beyond him. You know, sometimes teams take on the personality of their best player. And the Thunder are all about playing the margins. And I get it. Like, if you are a fan of a team, you want them to do everything possible to win. This is just beyond what the casual watching the series is willing to stomach. So we'll talk about that. It was a desperate game for them, and they won it. They did what they had to do to win it. So we'll get into that. But I go into series where I don't have a rooting interest, just waiting for the game and seeing how I feel. And that'll, like, oh, okay, I guess I'm rooting against this team. It didn't take till game two, but game two was a solidification that I don't want to look at Alex Caruso having success. I don't want to look at Shea having any success. I recognize Shea. MVP, two-time MVP. I get it. Great player. But I don't want to see Chet have success. This is where I am. This is less about rooting for the Spurs and rooting against the Thunder.
What those guys got
going. Yeah, so this is where I am. I didn't even feel this strongly about them against the Pacers. It was like, you know what? This is an awesome series. Let's see what happens. I'm fully in on a non-Thunder title. Repeat. I'm not looking for it. And we'll see if the Spurs can take care of it. We'll get to the biggest beneficiary of what's going on in that series, and it's no one in the actual series itself. We'll talk about that when we come back. The number is 713-780-3776 if you want to join us. Sean, we are officially 100 days away from the start of the college football season, and it is time for the list that revolve around a sport that's getting ever closer to beginning. So we will get to a list courtesy of On3. We won't do all top 100 players. That's a June thing. to go through the list of all 100 players. We won't
20
do,
players a day yeah. for an entire week.
If I make it 10 players a day, we can stretch it out even further. So we won't do that. But we will get to some of the guys who are relevant to this show and how we talk about it. And it's just the beginning. The guys had Josh Pate on earlier today. Just, well, less than about 45 minutes ago. That's the start of the interview. It was actually, when I look at it, really about 35 minutes since the interview ended, because those guys can't get enough of Josh Pate.
They so love Josh.
Talk about gratifying a guy. They love themselves some Josh Pate.
Josh is great.
Josh is great.
They love him.
I mean, I imagine there are people who know Josh that love him quite a bit. Of course, he's a somewhat recently married man. At least, so I'm sure his lovely wife loves him. His family loves him. And then it's John and Lance.
Do you think Josh Pate gets off the phone and he's like, wow, I feel good about myself?
I can't, look, they're big fans. We'll just say that. You know, some guys will say, I'll get a tattoo of this guy if they do this. There have been some other extreme things that guys do that they never follow through on because it's the craziest thing you could say when they tweet about, I will do this if this happens.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
John and Lance are those guys when it comes to Josh Pate. They will never actually follow through with it, but I would not be surprised if they said something like that about Josh Pate because they love him so much.
In the last, probably 4-ish months since he's been on?
Yeah, I mean.
Are they sitting there, dear Josh?
I don't know.
I wrote you, but you still ain't calling.
They would never. They're not capable of writing letters, so no.
Oh, okay.
They wouldn't do that. But the equivalent of that, I'm sure there's been a couple texts from Lance to Josh at some point about missing him. I don't know. If not, it all played out when he was on the air. You could tell they both missed him, and Josh will likely join us, or at least them. I'll sit there and make fun of them because of how much they love him throughout the college football season when we get there. So we're getting closer, and we'll get to some of the best players in the country, at least ranked by On3. I love it. I don't mind it. Every day closer to college football season means less that I have to pay attention to things I don't care about. It takes up quite a bit of my time. So we'll get to that at some point, and we'll take your calls, as I said. We're just getting started here. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So different sports react differently to offenses. In soccer, forceful pulling of the hair is a red card. It's considered violent conduct. And when you get a straight red, you get a 3-game suspension. You can fight it. It's different from 2 yellows, which you're out for the next game and, of course, thrown out of the current game. But you're back after you sit out. A straight red, get out of here for 3 games. Why do I bring it up? Because if you missed it, Isaiah Hartenstein, which I finally figured out is a proper way to say it because I went to the Oklahoma City Thunder's official page, and they have a pronunciation guide where they have the players whose names you might have issues saying. They'll say it themselves. Why Alex Caruso is part of that, I don't know. Why the 2 Jalen Williamses are part of that, I don't know. The only one you actually would need is maybe Mark Daigneault and Hartenstein, and maybe if you don't know how to say Gilgis.
Yeah.
But everybody else, I'm good, Kaysen Wallace.
Yeah, the Williams boys.
I got it.
You can go about your day.
Since a Jalen Rose came about, I've been able to say Jalen.
Yeah.
I can say Williams.
No matter what variant.
Yeah.
I got it.
They're all the same. And Kaysen Wallace as well. They wasted your time there. Yeah.
Kasan Wallace.
Possibly. Not the Wallace, but maybe Kasan. Okay. Kasan. That's a way where it could be different. But Hartenstein, as he says it himself, pulled Stephon Castle's hair. I don't believe the NBA is going to suspend him for a game. I just know how soccer, known for its floppers and the questions about guys and whether they're really hurt or not, that's a sport who has that, but they would. Hey, Hartenstein, you got to come sit next to us for 3 games. He won't get that. He likely won't get suspended. Does he get fined? I don't know. But it was a whole night of unethical behavior by the Thunder. You've got Chet stepping on Wimby's foot, looking down at his foot, and then stepping on it as they prepare for a potential rebound off a free throw. And then, of course, the leader of the bunch is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who somehow, some way, flopped on every shot attempt, it felt like. So much so that people, as I said, put a cut-up together of all his falling down when taking a shot. Look, he won his second MVP by even a wider margin than he did the first time around. So, despite what you might think of the other players who had a chance, the voters said, this is far and away our MVP. John brought up the fraud. He brought up this morning that he thinks Shai's flopping could lead to him not winning another MVP. In fact, I think he predicted he will never win another MVP. He's got two. That's a tough prediction for a 27-year-old in his prime who will likely be the best player on one of the best teams of basketball for at least the next 3 or 4 years to not win another MVP. But he believes that the dislike for his game will lead voters to not do it. I don't think the way we see it, the way the internet sees it, is going to keep voters from doing it if they think he's the best player in basketball. I think it would more be about the narratives. All right, you won two. We're done voting for you.
I think it's more that.
Someone else needs to win it this year.
It's the Harden thing of we gave you your one. All right, stop complaining. Now we're giving
Shut up, Rockets.
Yeah, and now we'll give it to Giannis. And now we'll give it to Victor.
And we will never give it to another American again.
Well, you know, that helps Shai's chances.
Yeah, it certainly does.
But yeah, I don't think that's crazy. That now I don't know, like the you know, like,
you think the Zach Lowe's and the Bill Simmonses of the world are going to be like?
I think Bill Simmons would get a little irrational.
I don't think Zach Lowe would though.
Yeah, no, you're right. But it is just so narrative based that like we've seen. LeBron won his four MVPs in 5 years. He's the guy known for the greatest longevity.
And enough and, of
and
you.
He only won them in a five-year span.
We're just done with you now. You can't win them anymore.
His first year in Miami, like you could have taken out a bet on your mortgage that he wasn't going to win.
Not a chance.
No matter how well he played, he was not winning that one. So it's not crazy to think that like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to win back-to-back and just be done winning them, especially with who he's playing in the series, that's like there might just be a very easy option to vote in as long as he plays 65 games.
Yeah, and if the Spurs wind up winning it,
yeah,
that would certainly lead to the narrative that Wimby needs to win an MVP because he is the best player in the world. So,
and he's not American, so they can vote for him.
Yeah, it's a very easy path for Wimby to start winning some MVPs as his Spurs, much like Shai's Thunder, will be at the top of the Heat when it comes to best teams in the NBA. So that game had some ebbs and flows where the Thunder, because the desperation that came with being down 0-1 and the thought of going down 0-2 and then going on the road was not something they wanted to think about. The desperation, the physicality, all was there. And they would get up double digits and the Spurs would bring them back in and go, okay, you're not running away from us. And that kind of was the nature of the game throughout. Then eventually, the Thunder made their one final run to get some distance, and the Spurs ran out of time to try to reel them back in. So the series is 1-1. I don't imagine that the physicality is going to go down. I think the Thunder may have found at least what they believe is the formula. We're not going to continue to guard him with smalls and him being Wimby. We're just going to up the physicality with the bigger guy and Hartenstein being that guy, and we're just going to do what we believe we have to do to compete. We're going to tug on Wimby. We're going to grab him here. We're going to grab him there and then fall down like we've been the ones assaulted because it seemed to at least work in game two. We'll see how the referees approach the Thunder's way of doing things in game three. I said as we went to break that the biggest beneficiary of this series is someone outside the series, and by someone I mean an entire team. Mostly it's two teams. We'll see if the Cavs tonight can tie the series at one after their epic collapse. But if you look at what's going on, the physicality of the series, the energy being spent, you've got De'Aaron Fox who hasn't played yet. He's got a high ankle sprain. I'm sure we'll get an update every game until he actually gets out there on the court about his availability and maybe even afterwards. Who knows how he'll respond to a game at this level of intensity coming off the high ankle sprain. So he was unavailable last night. Jalen Williams left after re-aggravating his hamstring. And, of course, Dylan Harper got banged up, I think, in the second half, and he left the game and didn't come back. So you've got three perimeter players whose question, and there are questions about their availability going forward. And if you're talking about hamstrings, you might as well just say, we may see Dylan Harper and Jalen Williams at the end of the series. We don't know the severity, but those two have real chances to miss a couple games if we just go by how hamstrings are treated. And those are like the most minor of aggravations.
And Williams had missed basically two entire rounds of playing basketball with the hamstring. I believe it's on the same leg too. So the Jalen Williams one is one that it might be seeing
curtains.
The finals.
If that.
Yeah. So that it'll definitely be tough. And then, the Harper Fox thing, if you're the Spurs, you kind of hope that Fox can come back as Harper, comes out of the
series. One goes out, one comes in. Yeah.
That way it's like, you still have two ball handlers on the court at the same time.
Simply
you can stagger
just
them.
Get the ball out of Stephen Castle's hands because the turnovers are at a ridiculous level. And he is their, particularly when Dylan Harper went out, their only ball handler that they can really depend on. And, he had his moments
the dunk. Distributing,
the dunk, all those things. But there's also the other thing when the live ball turnovers that he's now, there weren't a lot of them in game one, but it picked up as far as live ball turnovers in game two, and it helped the Thunder get out and runs because there are moments when the Spurs, and it wasn't just him, where the Spurs had a chance to either take a lead or build some more momentum, and they wouldn't even get a shot up, and that would lead to a Thunder, a quick 5-0 run, and that takes what could have been a tie ball game back out to 8 if a 3 is knocked down. That happened a couple times. So the Thunder needed the Spurs not being careful with the basketball to help them take leads, and it continued throughout the game. So that'll be something. If you can get De'Aaron Fox back and take the ball out of Castle's hands a little bit, you have, not that much experience. Fox hasn't played that many playoff games, but at least you have an experienced player with the ball who's a real point guard just to distribute some of the pressure that's being placed on ball handlers. So you watch how that series plays out, and, of course, it always comes back to the Rockets. What are they going to do? We had a call from Chris on the morning show, who is a noted Jabari Smith hater, about what this team needs to do to match up with what we're seeing out there in the Western Conference Finals. And, of course, the big name out there is Giannis, and everyone thinks, hey, if we get Giannis, that can solve some of our problems. Yes, bringing in a superstar helps, but what do you do to supplement? Because you think about Giannis, and you go, okay, you're trading young pieces to bring him in. More work would be needed because the depth at the guard spot for the Rockets simply does not – it doesn't match up now. Then you trade a couple perimeter players away to acquire Giannis. It certainly means you need to get reinforcements. You just can't survive. Forget about the old aspect of bringing in Giannis and KD. How many playoff guys would the Rockets have at that point? And I ask that question because there's a story – or at least something that was written by, let me make sure I have the publication right. It was the Dream Shake, one of the Rockets blogs. And it talks about the difference. They're just quotes from the two big names in the organization, Rafael Stone and Ime Udoka. If we remember, Ime Udoka, after their season ended, talked about there's maybe a little bit too much duplication. We need guys of varying skill sets, like he talked about. Three-point shooting. We need more shooting on the roster and maybe less guys who do the same thing. Rafael Stone went on Ryan Rosillo's podcast and said something different. He said, I don't think you're 90% of the time better off having – I do think you're 90% of the time better off having redundant strengths than you are having a guy who fits but isn't as good of a basketball player. There's trade-offs. So while it's just a couple quotes, and Ime's quote is – we do need to address some needs. The shooting or lack of shooting at times, I think we will have some very interesting conversations on having a little bit more of a mix instead of some duplicates out there. So in a quote from each, you see maybe a different philosophy as far as team building where Phil Stone like, hey, if we got several guys who are good at these things, we have a shot to be a really good basketball team. And Ime's maybe, hey, more specific, I would like a guy who's really good at this so I can mix and match in that way. You look at the Thunder and the Spurs, you would say Vassell is one of their shooters. Champagne is one of their shooters. The physicality from the backcourt spot is Castle and Harper, and Castle leading up into the series had improved the three-point shot in the playoffs. He went from a guy who wasn't really a shooter to a playoff shooter where he was shooting over 40% from the floor. So on about over four attempts. So pretty good for him as a guy not known. But what will we say about the Spurs and the Thunder? Are they more like what Rafael Stone is talking about, where they just have duplicates? Or are they more specific skill sets that match and come together to build a championship contending roster like Ime may be suggesting his team needs?
So there is some duplication with both teams, but with OKC, with the Wallace, Dort, Caruso trio, it's like, yeah, they're all kind of the guard to wing stopper types that you other team wants them to shoot, but they can make shots. They can make shots. That's really the thing, is like they just have two-way players. they have guys that can – they don't kill you on one end or the other, that can make plays on both sides of the ball. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Stone quote, it's a little bit of Stone, like, kind of not saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just being like, I'd rather just have a better player than a worse player that fits better.
Sure.
Which is, like, somewhat interesting, but also, like, when you say the guy's going to be worse, well, okay, yeah. I want the good players, not the bad ones. Like, I don't think that's as, like, illuminating of a quote. I think it's just kind of, like, a thing that...
good players are better than worse players.
Yeah, where it's like, no, I get it. Because you can just take it to the extreme of, worst shooter in the league. Like, I don't want that guy.
The problem is, you use a third overall pick on a guy who would fit the mold of a guy you wouldn't want. Like, if we're going by what Reed Shepard is currently...
Yeah, well, they don't... I mean, then he doesn't think that... he's a worse player.
I feel like he's a worse player than Stephon Castle.
Well, he didn't think that at the time.
Well, he's wrong. He's wrong.
Yeah. I will say, and there's people, I saw someone talking about this yesterday, where it's like, if Reed Shepard was on the Spurs,
I saw that.
Let's not act like he wouldn't be way better.
I think that
to me is more of a problem. Is that the development of OKC and San Antonio just seemed like so much better than like Houston, where it seems like these guys kind of are the like idea of what they were when they were a prospect, but it's just like
it hasn't been as much growth.
Yeah, it's just like what they were is just kind of what they are. You know, like they haven't expanded their games really at all. Like Şengün took 5 threes on opening night and or made 5 threes on opening night. And then, you know, by the end of the season, kind of just stop shooting, stop making them.
Well,
so there's a little bit of like, yeah, these guys are just still, you know, Amen Thompson's still a raw offensive player that's really good on defense.
Well, I will back anyone who's questioning the Rockets' ability to develop their young players. I will say there are just physical differences between what we're seeing from the Spurs and Reed Shepard. Like,
yeah,
they're just bigger, more physical guards.
Yeah.
In their backcourt.
That's part of it. Where it might be a situation where Reed Shepard's like the last guy who's whatever, 6'3", 180 or whatever he was to get drafted third overall. You know, like where it just might be a league where you have to be a 6'6 point guard now. Or if not 6'6, like 6'4 with some muscle on.
Yeah, Reed Shepard, of course, barefoot doesn't mean anything, but the combine, he was under 6'2. He was 6'1 and 3'4. So, and I don't know that his, and with the wingspan, that wasn't very, very good either. He's got the measurements there of like Kingston Flemings, whose height and wingspan came into question for a potential lottery pick. Now, Flemings not expected to go top three. He's likely in that 7 to 11 range or something like that. That's what I've seen most recently. But that's what we're talking about. Yes, Reed Shepard likely in the Spurs system, if we're just loving to criticize the Rockets and everything they do, would be better, but there are just certain physical limitations that would keep him from reaching the level of what looks like Castle and Harper will eventually be.
It's you just get more of the good stuff,
too,
where it's like they could, A, you can just live with like, oh, someone blew by Reed Shepard. Oh, Victor Wembanyama's back there.
Very true.
Like it's just easier to play, and maybe that's some of what's going on with the Spurs, that like we just haven't seen any of these young guys operate in a I don't have Wimby.
Without space. An alien behind
yeah.
them.
Yeah. And when we do, it's like, you know, they, what, beat the
Blazers
in game
three.
Four or game three, whatever yeah. that was, but lost the two games where Victor goes out in the middle of the game. So.
Yeah, it gets a better opponent, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, there's a little bit of like, especially Stephon Castle, the way he played last night, where I'm like, that's just a Houston Rocket right there. That's just what time they're on. Like
it's true.
The you know, pretty good numbers, really good dunk, and 10 turnovers. It's like I mean,
does a Houston Rocket a guard? I guess Reed Shepard or throwing another guy get to 25 points as well. Wow.
Yeah, it's more. Or I think of Min Thompson when I watch Stephon Castle.
Got
like
it.
Those are the guys that I'm like Stephon Castle and. I mean, Thompson are just kind of like different versions of the same guy. It's the situation. One grew up in a happy home. The other one had Ime Udoka as a father, scowling at him.
Yeah, he had the Mitch Johnson is the and the Pops were the supportive dad.
Yeah.
Well,
Ime Udoka was on the record saying. Every time someone scores on Amin Thompson, I'm mad at Amin Thompson.
Yeah. It's true. He did say that.
He's on record. He should never get scored on.
And Amin, going through it, is talking about needing to work on his rage. I don't know that. I don't know that Stephon Castle has uttered that ever.
It really does feel like a sociology experiment.
Yeah. Well, just drop two very similar guys in the same environment and see what happens.
Which is funny because Amin Thompson literally has a twin who's basically exactly like him. In Detroit.
Asar's never talked about working on his rage, though. So whatever Bickerstaff is doing.
We have the dark one. We have the evil twin.
Yeah. He's still working on things, but hey, hopefully he gets there.
He was pretty, you know, kept his nose clean pretty well this year.
Yeah, because he worked on things. He knew. I got to get some things squared away.
All right. Can you work on, you know.
Shooting a jumper?
You know.
Yeah, lethal shooter. Has tweeted about getting those guys in the gym. We'll see how that works.
He saw everyone make the jokes.
Yes, and he's go, hey, I got an opportunity here. I worked with Tari. Let's see if I can work with the Thompson twins. Keith, you want to talk NBA? We'll get to you when we come back. Anyone else? 713-780-3776. Keith, you called in yesterday. Didn't hang on. We're about four. I don't know how this break's going to go, actually. But we're not that far away. Hang through the break, and we'll get to you when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Sean, we may have another banger. From the producer behind Long Legs, Victorian Cycle. I'm a sucker for anything where the music doesn't match the time period. Like the trailer is a Victorian age movie about a woman who's, I guess, a psycho. And everything she's doing in the trailer suggests the title's appropriate. And then you have this more modern rock music over the entire thing. I'm like, oh, you might have me. We'll see how it goes. I guess it's a play on American Psycho, the Christian Bale movie. We'll see how it goes. But with, you know, frilly dresses and the thoughts about how women should act in that era as opposed to what time she's on.
Well, I think any era they're
where you're murdering people.
Please don't murder people.
But there's a lot of like the sexual politics in it as well as part of it that looks like to play a part in the trailer.
I'm sure she's gonna get married off or something at
some
point.
And maybe she murders the husband before or the fiance before it even happens. We'll see. I think we may have a banger with Victorian Psycho.
Okay. Just on the preseason watch.
It comes out in September, late in September, so sure, college football will be in the way, but maybe I'll find time to watch it. Let's get to Keith here. He wants to talk some NBA. What's up, Keith?
Hang up yesterday, but want to call back in today. Did you guys see that story about Coach Pop releasing Steve Novak from the Spurs, but making sure that the Knicks would sign him to a guaranteed deal? I think he was on like a podcast with Melo, but I thought that was a pretty cool story. You know, Steve Novak ended up being instrumental and a really good player for the Knicks. Also, Survivor finale last night. Did you guys watch that? And also, are you guys in on Widow's Bay on Apple TV with Matthew Reeves? I've been watching that show. It's pretty good.
I don't watch Survivor, so can't give you anything on that. I am watching Widow's Bay. I find it interesting. It's like a horror comedy. And it's set where you think it's a Stephen King-ish type deal because of the area and some of the lore around it, but it also has a comedy aspect in it as well. I'm looking at your story that you mentioned. Mostly I'm trying to see if you were right about Steve Novak being instrumental to those Knicks teams, because that feels like a stretch.
He was on those
teams. He was on those teams. Instrumental is a tough thing for me to agree
instrumental
with.
Instrumental for them making the second round.
I feel like Carmelo had a lot to do with that more than Steve Novak, but sure.
He probably, if I'm going to guess, minutes per game, I'm going to go 14 and a half minutes per game.
That's
Steve
wrong.
Novak.
He played 18, okay. nearly 19 to 1 and just over 20 in the other. So he was a real rotation guy.
Okay. Hey, listen.
Shot the ball well from three. So I guess we'll give it to you. Instrumental in not achieving anything of any note, but, you know, making the playoffs.
Making the playoffs.
We'll give it to you.
Yeah. Come on.
Like Steve, and they did win the Atlantic Division 1 year. Now,
see?
They lost in the
division champions.
They lost in the Eastern Conference semifinals to the Pacers, but hey, there it is.
Okay.
Okay, as far as the story, Steve Novak said it was like clear tampering what Pop was doing.
This is the first time here, or actually I did see like the caption of this clip on whatever Melo's show is. And I'll be honest, I saw Steve Novak in the title or in the caption. I was like, I'm not that interested in whatever the story is.
So Mark D'Antoni, former Rockets coach, really wanted Novak. So Pop's like, well, you're not really going to do much here. So I'm going to release you and you're going to have a spot in New York. So
they just did like a trade?
Pretty much, except nothing came the Spurs way. Okay. So Novak said, my agent calls me and says, when you get to practice today, Coach Pop is going to call you in the office. He's going to talk to you. I want you to be respectful. It's going to be good. What's going to happen? And then, of course, Novak's like, what the hell are you talking about? This is weird. And then Novak said it was obviously illegal and it's tampering. He says, basically, you're released. You're going to get on a plane today and you're going to fly to New York. That is what Pop told him. And then because Pop called, D'Antoni called Pop and said, hey, we want Steve. And Pop said, okay, if you guarantee him a one-year deal, since he's on a non-guarantee contract here, if you guarantee he's going to be a big part of what you're doing, I'll release him. So the two guys got together and said, hey, we don't have much use for him here. Who knows what his career would be here. If you got a spot for him, like what the Knicks did is what prospects get before the draft. They made him a promise. Hey, if you come out,
yeah,
we promise you a first round slot. You're not going to fall past us. And they promised Pop that, and Steve Novak wound up a Knick and had a couple years where he was part of a rotation that made the playoffs, even won a division at one point. So there it is. I saw Steve Novak, the name like you did, rolling around, didn't really look into it.
Whatever.
But there it is.
Okay. Yeah.
I did not.
I mean, he was going to get cut either way, right?
Well, I don't
know.
Maybe
he was just going to languish on the bench.
Yeah, as a non-guaranteed guy. And if he gets cut, he doesn't get his money. No. So,
right.
Or maybe the Spurs, like saving money at some point when his guaranteed date came up, was like, all right, we got to get rid of him. Instead, he goes to the Knicks and gets a guaranteed deal. And maybe it lengthened his career because he had a couple good years there and then he went on to keep playing.
It's so funny because this seems like how, like, one of those stories of like how business used to be done in the NBA. Red Auerbach was making these.
You know, the coaches handled things. And, yeah. Hey, you got a spot for my guy? All right, we'll get rid of him as long as you make sure. That's just, hey.
Like a you scratch my back, I scratch yours type of deal. Make right by Steve. I like the agent being like, hey, Steve Novak, don't
screw this up.
Don't insult Pop to his face when he cuts you.
Yeah, before he gets to letting you know.
Water in his face or whatever.
Yeah, look, Pop's going to do some stuff. Don't react. Let him get through whatever thing he's going to do. And you're going to be set up pretty nicely.
Yeah.
And you get to go play in New York.
Yeah. No, it is funny. It's like this happened, whatever, 14 years ago. It's like,
well, you put Steve Novak in front of a microphone, you get this.
No, I get it.
I don't know how many times he's been able to be in front of a mic and be able to tell the story.
No, it's just, again, it feels like how things used to get done. We're like,
a handshake and a smile.
It feels like we're a step away from Steve Novak getting traded for a bag of basketballs. I'll be honest. That's what it feels like. It feels like those trades were like a guy was traded for a fax machine.
Look.
Like, that's what this feels like.
In a world where everything's transactional and players aren't even people, they're just simply
numbers on a page.
And hey, you shoot 40% from the corner, so that's what you're going to do. We're not going to want you to do anything else. This is a more of an interpersonal approach. We like Steve. He's a good guy. Let's make sure he's set up.
Right by him.
Yeah, you want him. That's fine, but you better prove it. And D'Antoni, follow through.
No.
Shout out to
Steve. Morey would have been like, F that. Holding him hostage.
I mean, oh, you want
Trade
Steve.
Trade us Amari.
Oh, you want Steve Novak?
Yeah, give us Amari.
It'll cost you, but you don't want... doesn't matter.
But now you want them.
Now I know you want them. The important part is not what I want. It's what you want.
You know what? I can see why people didn't like Daryl Morey.
Honestly, like, yeah.
If this is what the smoke-filled rooms that ran
old
the
school
NBA,
basketball was like.
Yeah, and Daryl Morey came in here, you know, counting every penny.
Isn't he famous for duping the Knicks on a trade, too? Weren't the Knicks one of his victims at some point?
I'm sure at some point they got that. Certainly tracks for what time Morey was on at the moment and what time the Knicks were on at the moment.
Yeah. It's true.
And I mean, San Antonio times have changed too. Now they just absolutely demolish Sacramento every time they pick up the phone.
You know, maybe they talk nice to Sacramento on the phone and that's all it takes. Hey, the Spurs, they're calm. They're nice to us, right? Of course, De'Aaron Fox.
Until the trade terms come out, then it's like, what?
Well,
why are they getting pick?
But they should know while it's being discussed. They shouldn't be informed by the general public. Wow, the Spurs really got over on you guys again. They shouldn't. That's the problem with the Kings. They don't know what the Spurs are doing until someone tells them what the Spurs are doing to them.
I think it was they got a unprotected like 2031 Kings pick, which is like guaranteed to be awesome. I guess new lottery reform, maybe not guaranteed to be.
Yeah,
awesome.
You never know.
But. They got Harrison Barnes in a first-round pick for, like, basically doing nothing in a trade between the Kings and Bulls, which is, like, bad decision central. The Kings of – I think it was DeMar DeRozan trade? One of those ill-fated trades between those two teams. The Spurs somehow, like, snuck their way in, got Harrison Barnes, who played for him in the Western Finals, and a first-round pick for the trouble. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Come on.
So we are going to have discussions throughout the offseason whether the Rockets make a move or not about their plans. Just comfort yourself. You're not the Kings.
Yeah.
You're not the Kings.
Ime Udoka. Well, no, never mind. He would never cut Jae Sean Tate.
Not a chance.
I was going to say, would he do something like this where he's like, hey, listen, I know you won't play here. He actually probably tried to do it with Reed Shepard. He was like, hey, just got off the phone with Team B, they'll give you a fully guaranteed Reed Shepard. We'll just cut you today. And Reed Shepard's like, no, I have guaranteed money for several years. I was the number three. He's like, no, but we can just cut you right now today. And
Tillman,
you know,
will eat it. Hell, he's in Italy. He doesn't even know. He won't even be paying attention.
Yeah, just between you and me. And then, you know, you'll go to wherever, Brooklyn or something.
So the Knicks trade was like the Camby trade. I think the Rockets traded Marcus Camby to the Knicks. I remember at the time, if that was the one that people were applauding Daryl Morey for, I don't remember, but that was the one that's popping up right now. All right, we'll go to break. Daryl Morey no longer here. Steve Novak, former Rocket, too.
Yeah.
No
a
longer.
Lot of former. Mello.
Mello.
I was telling the story to.
Yeah, that ended well here. Mello has told the story about how Daryl Morey treated him. That ended well. To your point about how Daryl Morey didn't operate in the same way others did. All right, hour one done. We'll get to hour two when we come back.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk.